Hello and welcome to Boomeranging, from expat to repat, a podcast that explores the question, what could be so hard about returning home after years living overseas? I'm your host, Margot Anderson, and in each episode, I will sit down with a former Aussie expat to discuss how they survived repatriation and reverse culture shock, how they navigated the logistics of careers, friends, and family to successfully find their new place at home, and all without losing their global spirit. If you have just returned home, are thinking about it, or just love a good yarn told by professional globetrotters, then I have no doubt you'll enjoy meeting this diverse group of Australians. After two stints living in Hong Kong, the second stint 15 years, the last place Jacinta Redden thought she would next call home would be regional Queensland. Jacinta was living in Hong Kong as CEO of AusCham Hong Kong and Macau when she started to think about coming home to Australia. A chance discussion with a contact and friend she had worked with at age 19 at the Warrnambool Standard suggested a role had come up that she might be interested in. The role was in Cairns, and yes, she was indeed interested. Her daughters were initially horrified, but 8 months into her new life as CEO of Advance Cairns and the new owner of a Queenslander with a wraparound balcony and noisy bird life, and Jacinta is happy. Happy carving out her next expat experience in a new city with new career challenges and a new community. Just ask her about her housewarming party where the first guest to arrive was someone she had never met before. As someone who professes to like networking, I want to find out a bit more about how Jacinta kept her networks alive while spending the best part of 22 years overseas. And I would love to know what it is like to bring international experiences to our regional areas. With regions and jobs booming, what opportunities should other expats be looking for if they are keen to return, but maybe not to Sydney or Melbourne? So welcome, Jacinta.
Thank you very much, Margot. It's really an honour to talk to you.
It's great to have you. Now, we are speaking with you in the lovely far north in Cairns.
I am indeed. It's an absolutely beautiful, another day in paradise, beautiful weather here, clear blue skies. It doesn't get much better than this.
Before we delve into your international story, I'm keen for you to give us a little bit of a snapshot as to what life looked like prior to embarking upon a life overseas and that first time that you left for Hong Kong.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think I'd always really hankered for an international experience. I always wanted to travel. I was fortunate in that I had an auntie who was an intrepid traveller and used to come home and stay with us as children in between her various stints overseas. And it really planted in me a great curiosity about the world and about travel. So I always, always knew that I would travel. I was always keen to go off backpacking. As usual, I always did things back to front. So despite planning to do all that, I ended up buying a house in Melbourne first, which I thought would keep my feet anchored to Melbourne and to a mortgage at that time, but was able to sort of engineer things so that I was able to go off overseas. And I really welcomed the opportunity to live overseas rather than just do the backpacker stint. So it was, yeah, all systems go, very much leaning into wanting to live and experience life overseas. Although I had certainly thought about Europe, it had never really occurred to me to live in Asia. But a little bit like, I guess, here I am in regional Queensland, it never occurred to me that I'd end up living here.
So you went to Hong Kong with a career behind you, or, you know, foundations of a career. What did that look like before you went?
Yeah, at that time I was working as a journalist and press secretary for a government minister in Melbourne. And so the newspaper industry in Australia was certainly undergoing major restructuring, and a number of my friends and my then partner took redundancy and took the opportunity to go overseas. So that was our plan. Come to Hong Kong, work here for 18 months as journalists, and then head to London to work on Fleet Street, as all good Australian journalists did plan to do in the early 90s, and that never came to pass. So I had a great life in Melbourne. It's a wonderful city, but I was in my early 20s. This opportunity presented itself, and so we took off to Hong Kong, and the 18-month plan turned into close to 10 years in that first stint.
And so what were you doing then?
Well, again, I was just very prepared to do whatever job it took, just took the first job that I was offered, working for a PR agency, and very quickly then got a job with a fabulous corporate affairs agency doing really interesting work that for you know, a young Australian in my early 20s to be working with, for example, the CEO of Cathay Pacific and the chair of Swire was quite an extraordinary opportunity. And that was the sort of experience that kept me in Hong Kong.
And so after 10 years of these incredible door-opening experiences, you do return to Australia. Did you think that was going to be a permanent move back, or did you sort of think, okay, we'll come back for a while and then maybe we might head back again?
To be honest, this whole expect the unexpected, which I've only really identified just now talking to you, Marco, but life never really turns out the way we plan it. And I think I've always been open to, you just never know what's around the corner. I had a fabulous role with Tourism Australia at that time. I'd been working for Tourism Australia in a regional role, promoting one of the world's favourite holiday destinations in the fastest growing markets of the world in the lead up to the Sydney Olympics and with the opening up of the China market. So it was a really fabulous professional and personal experience. I was travelling around Asia a lot, promoting Australia. And I, in some ways, think I fell victim to our own publicity and really thought, oh my goodness, I need to go back. And then there's always a personal push as well. At that time, my mother was not well. She was about to undergo open heart surgery. And I just thought, this is time to return to Australia. But when I left, I just kept my options open. I took absent membership of the football club, which was a great with two young babies in tow, because we basically lived there when I first returned. So I hadn't planned it. I hadn't planned that my return would be limited to 5 or 6 years, but nor had I intended to be there that long either.
So in 2007, you head back to Hong Kong. Do you think it was always going to be Hong Kong, or were you sort of thinking it could have been Europe? Was it networks that drove that decision and opportunities that came through those networks that took you back?
Yes, it was the opportunity through the networks. It was the professional relationships that I had developed from my previous experience in Hong Kong. I was familiar with Hong Kong. I knew what to expect. The network there was very helpful. And in fact, I returned and took up a role with the public relations agency that I had joined when we were consulting with Cathay Pacific, for example. And so that was a really good reintroduction into Hong Kong. And it was a very different life. I'd been largely single without children for those first sort of 9 years during the over years in the 90s, and I came back with two very small children and quite soon became a single parent there. So it was a very different experience. But as many experts would know listening to this podcast, you know, we're very blessed living in Asia, having access to full-time living help, and that was certainly one of the attractions for me, you know, having to support my children and to have a great opportunity.
It's a really conscious decision career-wise, but also personally, to be anchored in another city or to be living there. What was it about Hong Kong that, from a lifestyle perspective, that you just loved?
I think the people that you meet there are all of a certain type, where to have stepped out of your comfort zone and to embrace something new and different and incredibly different and foreign from where you've come from is a real draw card. And so you find you have a wonderful network of supportive people from around the world. The professional experience is always incredibly interesting. And to be in Hong Kong during what was the biggest story of the year in 1997 for the handover was amazing. As a former journalist, just being in the cusp of that and of the emergence of China, US-China tensions. I've always been interested in geopolitics. So from a professional perspective, the work was interesting. The work was always regional or global. And, you know, to be able to step outside Australia and to have a broader perspective was really a gift in many ways. And every day I was learning something new. And it's also, I quite like being a fish out of water and learning new things all the time. So, you know, to be working with wonderful Hong Kong Chinese friends in a very different culture, I loved the Hong Kong Chinese culture, the ability to travel for business, the ability to hop on a plane and go to a wonderful Asian city or beach for a long weekend. It really was an extraordinary experience.
At some point, though, you start to think about coming home. I'm interested, after such a long period of time abroad, what sort of parameters did you have around the return?
Well, at that time, my daughters had completed school. So my older daughter is now in second year university, and they're just a year apart, and her younger sister was in final year at school. And so it was really about thinking, where could we settle? Where would work with the girls at university? I have one daughter at uni in Sydney and one now at uni in Melbourne. And I have family in Victoria. But it was a range of different things that I was considering. At one point, my younger daughter was thinking about university in the UK. So a lot of that was brought to bear. There was a lot of uncertainty, not really sure where we would end up, but just knowing that it was time to move into the next phase.
And I guess, life's rewarded you for that bravery of sort of stepping out. I am interested, though, after such a long period of time, we do have a lot of people in our community that have been away for 20 plus years. Did you have any professional fears about coming home or concerns around getting your next role after so many years living overseas?
Absolutely. And because I was running the Australian Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong for a number of years, you know, that was part of the conversation that we often had. And I did myself experience that when I first looked to return to Australia at the end of 1999, and I was told, oh, but you have no networks here, which is nonsense, really, because anybody that can forge a career across regions and work across cultures and across languages and across regulatory frameworks can definitely re-establish themselves in Australia, certainly. And I think that anybody that asks that question is certainly not someone that you would want to work with or a headhunter that you would want to partner with. So it was very much about reconnecting with Australia, getting to understand the political and business landscape, the issues that Australian businesses were facing, and also understanding the value that I could bring and looking for a role that saw my overseas experience as a significant advantage rather than as something that I had to put behind me and reestablish myself.
You made a lovely comment off air when we first connected that you come back, you don't go backwards. And I think that that's something really important in terms of mindset for many expats when they're returning.
Yeah, because I had come back once before and re-established myself back in my home city of Melbourne, and I did find that quite difficult. You know, there are many friends that you pick up with and it's as though you've never been away. And indeed, professionally in some ways, although I was away for close to 10 years, you know, it seemed like that at times as well. And so quite quickly you settle back in and it's as though those fabulous years just disappear. And I did feel that I was losing part of that international perspective, which I think is an incredibly valuable lens that expats can bring to the workplace when they return. And so when I was looking to come back, of course, my family were here in Melbourne and down at Geelong. That was a contributing factor, but I also didn't want to feel that I was coming back to settle back, if you understand what I mean. So I certainly never thought that I would end up in Cairns. I'd been looking at some opportunities in Sydney as well, but I ended up going to, you know, spending time in Sydney. I got COVID. It was wet and damp in July, and then I was flown up here for the interviews. And it was beautiful and cultural, and, you know, one of the aspects of the role that I have and indeed of the city of Cairns is it's very outward looking. We have an international airport, very much engaged with the Pacific and with Asia, and that was held significant appeal to me. In many ways, it actually feels like another expat posting because it's a part of the world that I know nothing about or I knew nothing about 6 months ago. I'm learning so much about, just from an environmental perspective, the issues facing rural and remote communities in the Cape. I'm learning about the culture, the landscape, but also what was really interesting to me was this extraordinary opportunity to learn about Indigenous culture and Indigenous Australians. And that was something that we certainly lost touch with overseas. And living in far north Queensland, of course, it is something that surrounds us on a daily basis. And I'm very much enjoying learning about Indigenous culture.
Yeah, beautiful. And it's a lovely way to reconnect, isn't it, with our own culture, you know, through that lens. And I think that love of learning is something that I hear a lot from expats. You know, when you are overseas, you can't help but be in a learning mindset when you're away, be it for another culture there or the nuances of other cultures, also the opportunities professionally. So to be able to continue that learning opportunity when you return is, I'm sure, just something that's so invigorating as part of the return.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've found, and I would hope that many of those listening to the podcast would find as well, that you can find there are niches or paths that you can carve out that will draw upon your international experience. So because I was working for many years in asset management with a particular focus on ESG, here I am in one of the world's best known environmental regions, the only place in the world where two World Heritage areas meet, where we are looking at how we can develop a knowledge economy, how we can really capitalize on our green credentials. And so for the rest of this week, there's a global business conference on here that's bringing speakers from around the world to talk about sustainable finance. And on the final day, Margot, we get to spend a day snorkeling on the Great Barrier Reef.
Beautiful.
And, you know, it's these sorts of ways that you can sometimes find opportunities in unexpected ways if you're open to learning. And again, it was a risk coming here, I guess. But I, you know, I kind of thought about it, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Look at where I'm living. It's beautiful. The role seems interesting. What is the worst that can happen?
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that's the mindset that so many people have when they go overseas. What is the worst that can happen? You know, we can change tact. And so I think that to be able to, again, continue that mindset when you return is just so helpful. So,
yeah. And I think, Margot, just picking up on what you'd said about the learning mindset, for me, the worst thing that could happen is that I'm bored. Because if my work isn't challenging, if I'm not finding I'm meeting new people and learning things, then I think I would really become, bored and actually look to create a different path. And I think that's certainly something that as an expat living in Asia, you are never bored, ever.
I'd like to just go back a step to when you were originally introduced to the opportunity with Advanced Cans. I mean, it was through a connection, I think, from 25 years sort of ago. What role has networks played or have networks played, in your career to date?
I think they've actually played a role in every single job that I've taken up, except perhaps for that first one when I entered journalism in some ways. But yes, so this opportunity came up because I had worked with, at that time we were both young journalists down at Warrnambool in the Standard newspaper, and we had kept in touch through the years, but primarily over social media, I guess, but keeping an active interest in each other's careers. And when Nick, who is now my chairman, did come through Hong Kong once, probably 13 years ago, we were sure to catch up. And it's just, you know, that genuine desire to keep in touch with people. And it is wonderful to have that connection from all those years ago in our teenage years right here in Cairns. And so when Nick called me to say, I've been following your role, what you've been doing with the Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong, I've been following you on social media, and I see that your youngest daughter is about to finish school. Have you thought about Cairns as an opportunity? And of course I laughed and said, no, I have not. but I did say, look, but you have absolutely identified that I am right for the next stage. And then, you know, subsequently, as I said, I came down to Australia. It had been 2.5 years. And, you know, anybody listening to this who lived overseas during COVID knows just how difficult it was. And so the whole driver to be back in Australia or to be able to be closer to family was really important too. So first time in 2.5 years, I flew to Melbourne, then Sydney, and then up here to Cairns. Very much welcomed the opportunity. In fact, looking back, I think Nick was very strategic. He'd lined up a couple of meetings for me with other expatriates who had global experience, who had chosen to live in Cairns. And it was very compelling to meet them, and they were very persuasive.
As you were sitting on the deck in the sunshine somewhere glorious, yeah.
Absolutely, eating the finest seafood.
I'm interested because you said that you really sort of dived into sort of re-educating yourself at one point around what was happening in Australia. Were there any particular groups or things that you decided to join or to take a look at that helped you with that process?
Yes, very much. And I think, again, many people listening to this would have found themselves in the same situation that I was in, where I've been working for global companies that didn't even have a presence in Australia. So for me, keeping tabs on what was happening in Australia was just not really in my orbit. I just didn't have really the bandwidth for that when, you know, we're looking at issues in the UK or the US and across the Asia Pacific. But, you know, the businesses I was working with only had a very small presence in Australia. So when I wanted to continue to learn and undertake professional development, and I rejoined both the British Chamber of Commerce and the Australian Chamber of Commerce, and then as I started to think about the ability of AusCham to reconnect with Australia, I saw enormous benefit in doing that. And then subsequently, having contributed to the Chamber through a variety of committees and attending events and becoming more engaged with what was happening in Australia, I ended up on the board of the Chamber and then had the opportunity to take up the role as Chief Executive. And that really allowed me to immerse myself then in Australian politics, particularly as it impacted Australia, particularly as it impacted Australia's relations with China. And also, as there were some laws that were being introduced that disadvantaged expatriates globally. And so you could see that you could actually have an influence back in Australia. And so whenever people would come to me and say they were thinking about Australia, what advice would I give? I would say the very first thing you should do is join the Australian Chamber of Commerce, no matter where you live, because, you know, the subject matter, the everything from, you know, they're running events about how to prepare from a tax point of view, but also having guest speakers who might be politicians, analysing and assessing the global and regional business environment and the impact in Australia. It is the single best way to keep in touch. And then through that, it is then using the resources and the networks that you have in Australia through the Chamber and just start to build on those. You know, if someone is visiting Hong Kong from Australia and they want to meet for a coffee, try and make that time. I remember Ita Buttrose when I was a journalist many, many years ago. I always remember her great piece of advice that always be nice to a cadet journalist because you never know, one day they could be your editor. You just never know who might be the person that wants to meet you for a coffee that could actually, A, end up being a terrific friend, and B, bonus, they might actually make a terrific business contact as well. It is just about being open to those sort of connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the diversity of experience and depth of knowledge in those communities is just extraordinary. And I think the other thing is that people are very generous in those communities about sharing their networks and sharing their knowledge. So it really is just a matter of putting your hand up to ask the question, isn't it?
Very much. And, you know, again, I found it wonderful to be able to go along to these events, and you're always made to feel very welcome. And I think it is by virtue of the fact that we are all there without family. So we've all left behind our network, our family, and so we become each other's families. And I have lifelong friends, and that will keep me connected with the world.
How have you adjusted to the pace of being in a regional centre as opposed to even just a major capital city in Australia?
I don't find a big change at all, which seems probably strange, but I think that might partially be by virtue of the fact that I came here after an extended COVID experience in Hong Kong where we weren't leading the lives that we once did. And so for 2.5 years, there was no travel. We were online working. It just wasn't the same. And I think that that perhaps has really led me to relish the lifestyle here where people work very hard. One thing that I have found difficult, because in Asia people start the working day later, and here people are up and out and making the most of the day and exercising from 5:30, 6 a.m. in the office at 7:30 and finishing at 5 or 4:30 in order to make the most of the back end of the day, because there's a very active lifestyle here. So people work hard. Again, you know, it's a misnomer to think that because I'm in the regions, it's a slower pace of professional life. I've not found that at all. But I found that people have a really good balance where they work hard when they're at work, but they recognize the value of being outside the workplace, whether it's going kayaking in the afternoon. Fridays, people leave early, and I'm really not used to this. But it's wonderful because they're off. They might be going up to Port Douglas for the weekend, or they're going up to the Tablelands. They're spending the weekends camping or fishing, and they really relish the lifestyle up here. And so it's definitely not the same pace in Hong Kong when it was in the middle of, you know, in its vibrant heyday when we were traveling on business and there was always lots happening. But here there's certainly always new things to discover. There's always cultural events, there's performances, there's one thing, of course, in Hong Kong that you're never able to do is go on a road trip. So, you know, there's lots of driving I'm doing to catch up. I had an interesting work event in Weipa on the Northwest Cape. I was down at Innisfail towards Mission Beach on Friday. There's lots of exploring I'm doing, and I really want to make sure I continue to do that and don't fall into the trap of just spending my time gardening and keeping the junk at bay at my Queenslander.
Well, it sounds like there's an incredible playground, obviously, to explore. And that's both professionally and personally. I mean, the distances are vast, aren't they?
A place like Cairns attracts people from around the world. And I have found that there are many people here who have moved from elsewhere, whether it be from Perth or New Zealand or the UK. There are many people who have chosen to call Cairns their home. And in some ways, that's like, you know, exporting that expat willingness to be there. And it's been a really wonderful experience. The community has been terrific at welcoming me and connecting me. It's been great.
Was that a surprise to you that there were so many expats or there was that expat, you know, mindset there?
Yes, I guess it was just something I hadn't really thought about. And because I didn't know Cairns at all well before I chose to move here, a little bit like Hong Kong, moved to Hong Kong and I'd never been there. And similarly, I'd had the one trip here with some journalists in the late 90s and it changed so much since 1999. And then I'd had the one trip up for the interview process. So again, it was a bit of a leap of faith, but it just felt right. And the natural environment really helps. Decisions around commuting and the daily grind of working in a big capital city certainly came into play. So, you know, I have a really lovely, pleasant commute. The natural environment is just beautiful, and you know that really helped shape my view as well.
Now, your daughters also came back to Australia to start life at Australian unis. You've described them as third culture kids who initially felt like invisible migrants, I think was the phrase you used. How have they adjusted?
They're still adjusting, I would say. You know, they're currently nagging me to send them back to Hong Kong for Christmas.
Right.
So we're having that bit of a battle, but I think anybody would sort of experience that. It is tough. Hong Kong was the only home they knew. They're half Irish, and so they would spend half their time when they had holidays with their father's Irish family in Dublin and then on holiday in Europe with my family in Australia or on holidays around Asia, which to anybody here sounds completely ridiculous, but to experts listening would understand that. And so it has been a challenge for them to move back, but they're both enjoying university. And I think it will be a struggle for them to find their way. My youngest daughter, when she started at uni at Melbourne, she was trying to figure out all these country kids were there. It took her a while to figure out who are all these people and where do they come from? All these places I can't pronounce. And where's Wagga Wagga? And what's Deniliquin? And, you know, she was desperately kind of looking for expats to connect with, because she knew that they would have a common bond. It will be interesting for them, but I think it's also a unique point of difference, and I hope they maintain that international perspective as well until they move into the workforce.
And have they overcome their horror of you going to Cairns?
I'm not sure. I think when they come up here on holiday with a friend and they might actually make friends here, I think that will make a big difference because, of course, when they come up, I am at work. It is challenging when you're a teenager and you're left to your own devices. So, but I know that will change over time. I mean, already they're discovering their friends are saying, your mum lives where? Oh, you're so lucky. You know, we get to go to Geelong. They will certainly come to really relish that, I'm sure. But it's only been sort of 6 or 7 months and they're in that adjustment stage. And, of course, Hong Kong was their home. It was really hard for them to leave, and I up and left before they had a chance to say goodbye. So that was really hard.
I think it's often interesting, as somebody who was an ex-teacher and saw the international kids, you know, they would hold the Australian passport, but they've never lived in Australia, but they identify as Australian on the Australian days. But in terms of actually coming back to Australia, it's such a learning. It's such a learning to sort of work out where you fit in that and what part of your story that is.
It is. And they didn't go to the Australian International School. So to a certain extent, they were even more removed from a lot of the cultural learnings and even just about Australia's history. So Australia Day was not a thing for them, wasn't celebrated, certainly in the ESF school. They would probably know more about British history, UK history, and global events than they would about Australia. And so there'd be some really basic questions that they would ask me, and I'd think, oh my goodness, I have really failed as a mother. I don't know these basic things, but you know, they're learning.
If there was one or two key pieces of advice that you would give for Aussies who are preparing to come home, what would that be?
It would be reconnect with the Australian community long before you plan to return. If you leave that until you're calling removalists, it's too late because it seems too transactional. You really need to make sure that the networks that you re-establish are genuine, that people know who you are. And it's also important that you do that while you still have a role. If you're going back and looking for work, I think it's going to be harder. So just keep up those connections right now. Make sure they're very genuine. It's not a transactional attempt to build a network.
Now, we like to close all of our podcasts with five quick questions. So I'm going to put those to you now. Living overseas taught me what about myself?
I think that this conversation has taught me that I loathe being bored and I'm really curious.
The number one skill I use today in my career from my time overseas is?
Networking, joining the dots. It was all of the networking that I learned in Asia where I'm curious about other people and I really enjoy connecting the dots and bringing various people together and businesses together.
The best thing I have discovered since arriving home is?
Australia is a truly beautiful place.
Gorgeous. The first thing I'd encourage a new repat to do is?
Join some clubs, join some associations, really step out of your comfort zone. Treat it like it's an expat posting. That's what I've certainly done and that's worked for me. I say yes to everything.
And a word, song or quote that best describes your time overseas?
Look, there are two songs that I'm really struggling to choose between. One is The Waits, I'm in London Still, because it's a beautiful song and the lyrics talk about the deep-seated roots that you have with home and with Australia. But the other one that I love and we would play every Christmas, of course, is White Wine in the Sun by Tim Minchin. And the story there about sitting around and drinking white wine in the sun just really evokes Christmases in Australia. And it's a wonderful, wonderful song. And so that really actually describes my time in overseas, reflecting on Christmases in Australia.
Excellent. Thank you, Jacinta. You've been so generous with your time and I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if any expat finds themselves up in far north Queensland, I'd be really happy to make them feel as welcome as people here have made me. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review, share it with your friends and family, and subscribe for future episodes. For more information on our guests, please head to our website, insyncnetworkgroup.com, where you can check out the show notes and also find more information about our career advisory programs and fabulous community.